Accession number 25219, Reel 2.
I think it's what my father bred into me, you know. My father being an ex-Sum Major East Surreys. And he turned around to me and said, all you got to do in the army is keep your nose and your boots clean, you know, and behave yourself, and you don't find any problems. I found that's true. Yeah. And you do things for other people, they'll do things for you. When I became an ASM, I went to, came from Borden, I went to 7 Armoured Workshops, became an FRG commander. I was FRT, and then I had a group as well, so I became senior staff sergeant and became an FRG commander. And I used to go out with 2 or 3 half-pack teams and go out with regiments and things, what have you. And we had a good organisation there. Yeah.
What does FRG stand for?
Forward Remy Group. You had a Forward Remy team, which was a half-track with about 4 blokes on it. And you went there, and you went out to a Centurion tank, for instance, that had a gearbox blown. You went out with a little trailer on the backs with a gearbox. The gearboxes people think of, and those little things, you know, about sort of foot wide. These weigh 1 ton and 10 pounds plus 5 gallons of oil, so they're pretty large. They're the epicyclics I was talking about, the gearboxes. And we would do a gearbox change, or an engine change, or an oxygenator change, or final drive change, whatever you had to do to get the tank back on the road. We had a pretty good... The guy who was actually technically in charge of those at one stage was Major Langham at 7 Armoured Workshops. He was a good guy. And then we had Major McDonald Smith, who was also another nice guy, you know what I mean? I've been very lucky. I've had some good officers in charge of me and so forth. But, I blotted my copybook while I was out there. The reason why I haven't got my LS and GC, I went out on an exercise, and it was a NATO exercise, so there was no drinking. And we were out with a supporting 26th Royal Armoured Engineer Squadron, who had a lot of fairly old Centurions. And we went out there, and we did one vehicle, and there was another one in the vicinity, so we signalled up to get another piece of equipment, and we stayed out there to help them as well. And because we ran out of food, so the only thing I could do was to try and get my guys some food. So in Germany, when you're out in the middle of nowhere, the only thing you've got is your Gestapo. You know, there isn't any villages around, so I used the Gestapo in order for my guys to get some food. But with strict instructions, no drinking, and there was none. But unfortunately, I drove down with a half track to pick up half of them, and you know, the half go back. So there's somebody always with the vehicles. I left my vehicle unattended for not more than 2 minutes, and somebody had seen me pull up and had a look inside and seen my weapon, so they stole my weapon. So of course I got had up for that and got a severe reprimand for my stupidity. So that was 7 Armoured. Then I went out to Cyprus. There was a bit of hoo-ha happening in Cyprus, and they wanted somebody to run D10B in 48 Command Workshops. So I went out there with my family, and we arrived, and we got some temporary accommodation in Dhekelia. First of all, in Larnaca, we lived actually in Larnaca, but that didn't last long because the Turks and Greeks started fighting each other in earnest. And so anybody with less than 6 months to do was shipped out, which made accommodation available within the SBA, stopping base area. And they then shipped us all inside, and we were there for 3 years and just over 3 years, 3 or 4 months, something like that. And we still meet each other once a year, the senior ranks of the 48ers. You may have seen it in the Remy magazine. We have a meeting. In fact, it's my job to organise this year's, and it'll be in November. So we still meet together. That was a bit hairy from time to time. We, you know, sort of the odd things happened. But we weren't frontline troops, so we didn't have to bother about so much. But, yeah, we had the odd little scare.
So what year is this that you're in Cyprus?
Oh, let me look, because that can tell me. 1963 to 1967. Yeah.
So what was the routine like out there?
Cyprus?
Yeah.
Pretty good. Of course, the weather's good. And facilities were good, in as much as pretty decent sort of naffy. We had a family's beach in Dhekelia. We used to get up fairly early in the morning, so you started work at 6. And the idea was you started work at 6, and then you worked straight through till about 2, half past 2, and then finished. Because, you know, to work, anybody who worked sort of, as far as the Greeks were concerned, anybody who worked in the summer up between 2 and sort of 6 is absolutely crazy. They all had siestas, even their shops shut, so it was pretty warm in the summertime. But, the only trouble is, it's rather peculiar in the army. You have regulations that say things will happen on a certain day, and then you get sort of a rather belated summer. But because it's gone past the date when you've got to move back in from shorts and shirts into number two dress, you had to be in number two dress despite whatever the temperature was. And in May, the reverse happened. You know, sometimes the winter held on a little longer. But it said you had to be in shorts, so you shivered in shorts because, you know, and you wait a week before somebody decided up at the head office, in Nicosia, that, you know, we really ought to rescind this because it's a bit stupid. And then, lo and behold, you'd find 2 days later the whole damn thing had changed again. But, yeah. But that's the army for you, you know, regulations are regulations. But no, Cyprus was pretty good.
And you were a staff sergeant there?
I was a staff sergeant there, yeah, in charge of D10B, yeah. And whilst I was there, there was a move to reduce the manpower in Cyprus. So they wanted some people to do some studies, and so I volunteered to do a bit of work study and do an assessment of the manpower requirement for Cyprus for the next 10 years. And that was... I'm trying to think of the name of the colonel I had there. It's gone out of my head. Anyway, he wanted this done, so I was given an office and a clerk to do some paperwork, and my job was to do an assessment, because we're using SEP in those days, which is a way of trying to forecast what repair times were needed for various vehicles, and then you could do an analysis of a year's worth of work, and then for a vehicle of an age, so you could forecast how many hours worth of vehicle mechanics time you would need to maintain that number of vehicles. So having had a forecast of what the equipment was going to be on the island in the next 10 years, then you could hopefully do a forecast of how many men you would need in your workshops to be able to support those number of vehicles. So that was one of the jobs I had to do, which I understand went fairly well. So the next thing was I went away on a work study course, proper one at Shrivenham, and I did fairly well. I got a B+ grade, which there'd only ever been one A, so I had a B+, which was fairly good. And then when I left Cyprus, I'd heard on the grapevine that there was going to be a vacancy at Shrivenham for somebody to teach work study. So I applied and I got it. Took over from a guy called Don Dunbabin. And I went to Shrivenham, which I got on extremely well. They sent me to Engineer's House to do a course. They sent me to Bristol University to do a course. I went to Loughborough University as well. Became the Army's pseudo expert on ergonomics. And I taught ergonomics and various other management techniques at that place for about 4 1/4 years. Great, marvellous time there. Then the Corps said to me, you know, you've been ERE long enough, extra regimentally employed, working for somebody else, so you've got to come back to the Corps. So I came back here to Arbourfield. And I took over the methods engineering wing under Major Laurie, teaching artificers work study and methods engineering, we called it. We were the only people who did that. We stayed with the old fashioned idea of methods engineering, but really it was work study by another name. Having done that, I stayed here for a while, got whipped away to Northern Ireland to do a special little job halfway through. I went out there and did several months doing a special role, and then I came back and took over again Arborfield. And then I went out from there, I was at ASM by now, and I went out to take charge of 65 Core Support Squadron Workshops, which was my last, you know, field job.
What year was this?
74. Yeah, 74 I went there. Until 77. And I took over there, and at that time was the time when REME took over the responsibility for all transport, including waterborne transport, which previously up to then had been the responsibility of the Royal Engineers and the RCT. So I took over 65 Core Support Squadron Workshops. Then I took over the waterborne workshops on the River Weser, which looked after tugs and S-boats and things like that. And then I took over the War Maintenance Reserve as well. So I had a forward echelon at Hildesheim and a rear echelon at Sanilager, and then the two workshops, one in the main town and one on the river. And then they decided that it ought to be an EMIS job, and they wanted to put a captain in. So they sent a man from, I think it's C8, to come and talk to the major, who turned around and told them that he didn't want to change Mr. Waters. He was quite happy with me, so I stayed until the end of my time. I had 6 months to do, and I came back and went to Borden and worked setting up the questions and syllabi for the people who are going to do HND and ONCs, and the questions had to be vetted by the various organisations in London. So my job was to make up the questions and then send them up, get them vetted. Once they'd been agreed that they were a good enough question to meet the standards of the HND or whatever, we would take them back and put them into a computer system so that, you know, that you could change and do one from, you know, from on metallurgy or whatever. You could take, say, 8 questions and you could take one from there and it would be randomly selected. Eventually, artificers get used to them, so you need to change them every now and again, because what a little crib piece of paper. You know, this is a question that's on the paper. Then eventually, after about 6 months, you've got them all. You know, so the answer is just keep changing them. So you have to keep on sending them up and getting them vetted and verified and so on and so forth. So that's how I firstly finished up the service. I worked there for the best part of 6 months until I came out.
That must have been interesting. How did you come up with the questions?
How did it come? Well, basically speaking, some of the questions were already there from previous artificers courses, but some of them weren't in-depth enough, if I can put it that way, that they weren't searching enough in the way that they were prepared. You could give a rather blasé answer, you know. And also you'd be careful, because if you say, what do you think about so-and-so, technically speaking, if the person tells you what he thinks, it may be wrong, but you've asked him what he thinks and he's told you. So that's not a viable question, and I'm afraid there's a lot of that goes on. What we had to do was to take the questions we've already got, which was our base, and some obviously were so a bit mundane, so they had to be thrown out. Some of them could be then expanded to cover a slightly wider area. Some had to be made to request a more in-depth response. So that's what you had to do. And then after that, of course, we had to devise other questions. And it was, you know, it wasn't difficult to try and you know what you were trying to do at the end of the day, what you were intending to achieve. So if you think about what you're trying to attend to achieve, if you work back from that and find a question that's going to give you that answer, then, you know, you've got it solved, really. yeah.
So you came out of the army in 1977.
Yeah.
How were you demobbed from the army?
Demobbed? Basically.
How did you leave the army?
Well, I was at Borden, and basically speaking, it was a question of, well, you're going. So as I'd been there for 6 months, they dined me out as an ISM and basically given a little red book and said bye-bye. And basically that was it. I felt at the end of my service that it was a little bit of a letdown, because it was just a question of, you walked into an office and met a colonel who, basically speaking, I'd only ever seen once. He said, right, this is your, what's the name, done 22 years service, and thank you very much, and bye-bye. And that was it, out the door. And that was how it was. And the only way, the only send-off you got was, sort of cheerio from the mess members, basically. Which is a bit of a letdown at the end of the day, you feel you've done 22 years and 23 days. So I found out when I looked at my little book what the 23 days were. I think that's from when I actually took the Queen's shilling, and then before I actually joined the army. That's 23 days. Yeah, so, it was a bit of a letdown. But it was no problem getting out into Civvy Street, because whilst I was at the College of Science, I had become a member of the Institute of Work Study Practitioners, which became the Institute of Management Services. I was also a member of the O&M Society. So as a result, I was qualified for Civvy Street, both as a vehicle mechanic and so forth. And the work study bit did me well. But in fact, I went off to Germany. I went back working for the British Army. The reason was that I met a lady out there. So I left my wife and family, went out to Germany. And I worked for 28 Amphibious Engineering Regiment. Major Tim Stroud was the commander there. And I went back to the shop floor to work as a vehicle mechanic, which was quite interesting. I found that I hadn't lost my hand skills and I was able to, do things. Got on very well. However, family-wise, it didn't work out. People wouldn't leave me alone and, my family were causing problems. So I came back to England, and because I had my work-study skills, I was employed by GKN Vanderbilt as a work-study engineer. Then I became their senior engineer. Then I became their senior engineer. Then I took over a role of trying to save a company in northern Italy, which I managed to do successfully. As a result, I was headhunted by another company who then offered me something I couldn't refuse, to become industrial engineering manager of an American company based in the UK, which I took and went out to the States for them, came back again. And eventually the company closed down, then I went and did a couple of other jobs, and then I retired. Finished up as the works manager of a company called Franklin's Industries. My potted life history.